Hello, I'm Mitch Hank with MadisonTalks.com. It's my pleasure to introduce the Reverend Phil Blackwell.
This is Phil Blackwell thinking out loud about what people who are homeless have taught me. I invite you to listen in. Because first and foremost, what they taught me is exactly that, they're people. We sometimes talk about the homeless as if that says it all about a portion of our population. All we need to know is that they're homeless. And yet, as part of my vocation as a minister of various congregations over 45 years, I have met a wide range of folks who do not have places to call home. Men, to be sure, that's our stereotype, but also a lot of women, most dramatically an increasing number of women and children. To find a mother and two preschool children sleeping in the doorway of the church in zero-degree weather broadens one's experience of who's included among the homeless. And the fastest-growing group to be numbered among the homeless in the United States? Teenagers. Some who have run away from home seeking safety or sanity. Others kicked out because of behavior or increasingly gender identity issues. And to be clear, there is a wide range of racial and ethnic backgrounds as well. Some people who are homeless are well-educated, college degrees and more. I mean, what happened? What is their story? And then there are those with little or no education. Why not? How did they get left out? There are some with obvious physical problems, others with emotional instability, and others with severe mental limitations, all conditions which are not being addressed on the streets. And then there are others who have no obvious problems, but circumstances, things that led to a falling apart of their worlds, divorce, loss of jobs, abuse at home, major medical bills that bankrupted them. And many whom I have met are military veterans, no doubt some suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, who say that the Veterans Administration has failed them. People who have fallen through the cracks. People who are homeless, first and foremost, are people. When I first became the minister of a church on Daly Plaza in the heart of Chicago's Loop, I went to the weekly lunch that we hosted for people who were hungry, most but not all of whom were homeless. I called to attention the 200 people or so who were dining in the church hall to ask them for some advice. I told them that I had an appointment with the mayor in a few days to introduce myself to him, more of an audience with the mayor as it would be in Chicago. And I wondered what message would they like me to convey to him about being homeless in the city. I assumed that I would hear a plea for on-the-job training, for educational opportunities, for expungement of court records, for more available and affordable housing along the line of single-room occupancies. My high-mindedness was brought down to earth when the folks at the lunch wanted most, they said, was a place to take a shower and a place to wash their clothes. They knew they were untidy. They knew their odor was offensive. They knew that they looked like the vagrants they had to be. But in the center of the city of Chicago, there's no public place where someone can take a shower, and there's no laundromat where someone can wash clothes. Let us start with the basics, they said, and we'll work our way up from there. The church routinely distributed new socks and underwear every week. I mean, imagine wearing the same underwear and socks 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, walking the streets in a single pair of ill-fitting shoes, sleeping in all that you own. Cleanliness, above all else, was their earnest dream. In my retirement, I served on an interim basis as a minister of a church in Madison, Wisconsin, a block from the state capitol. The city did not want the people with nowhere to go to loiter downtown. Send them to Middleton or Sun Prairie, anywhere, but just get them out of here. The congregation disobeyed and offered many services to people who spent most of their time on the streets. The image I remember most was the work of nurses and massage therapists at the foot clinic on Saturday mornings. Feet are abused when you must be on them all day and all night. So here were people kneeling at the feet of limping people, addressing injuries, removing calluses, and massaging life back into toes and arches. And often there was a dog for people to pet. Taking people seriously, even people with no permanent address. I learned another quick lesson back at that weekly lunch at the church in the Loop. One day I sat in the check-in table and made out name tags for our guests. We simply put the first name of each person in big letters so it could be read from across the dining room table. I said to one of the men as he took his name tag and stuck it to his jacket, "John, I'm sorry that we can't do this more than just once a week. I know that you have to eat every day and ideally more than once a day, and I apologize for not doing more." He stared at me, and with anger in his voice, he said, "Stop talking like that. Don't you know that this is the only place all week where I am called by my name rather than being called names?" Human dignity, the affirmation of being called by one's name in a hostile world. He taught me its value in no uncertain terms. Myron, who panhandled on the corner of Clark and Madison, taught me another lesson. Myron was an agreeable guy who usually sat on the sidewalk with his bucket in front of him and a book in his hands. He was a regular there, and many of the passers-by were regular supporters of Myron. He had a good spot right there on the route from the commuter train station to the offices in the Loop. He sometimes was absent for a few months, and I assumed that he had a drug habit that kept him away from time to time. One nice sunny afternoon, I stopped to talk with him. I commented on what appeared to be a pretty good collection in his bucket in front of him, and then I asked, "Myron, on a good day, how much do you make?" He said, "About $60 to $65. Back then, that was more than he could have made working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week at minimum wage, and it was all tax-free. Myron was a businessman of his own making. Not in a career with a future, but tomorrow is the most future that a street corner can offer. I heard stories about staying in overnight shelters provided by city governments and charitable institutions. It can be dangerous spending time with all of these other desperate people. There's always the chance of being robbed of your bus pass, your ID, your watch, your socks, your shoes, jacket, hats, gloves. And in the religiously sponsored shelters, predictably, you can be subjected to theological harassment. Believe as we say, or you go back out on the street. It's no wonder that some people prefer to take their chances sleeping under a viaduct with buddies they know rather than being cooped up with a bunch of strangers. And all of this at a time in most major cities where affordable housing is dwindling as neighborhoods are being regentrified. For a while, I met with a coalition to end homelessness. The goal was to do it within 10 years. But the problem proved to be more entrenched, so that the coalition rented an office, hired a staff, and developed long-range funding goals, goals that extended well beyond 10 years. Something urgent became something permanent. Decades ago, I worked for a NBC station in Chicago as a summer intern. Every day, I would take the commuter train from my parents' home in the suburbs into the city and walk across the Loop and up over the river to the merchandise mart. One afternoon, as I walked down Madison Street back toward the train station, I saw a young man sitting hunched over in the doorway of an empty shop. He had his head bowed and was balancing a sign against his knees. I was reluctant to look because I feared that if I showed an interest in him, he would ask me for money. But I was curious to see what his sign said, so I risked a long glance in his direction. It said, "If you cannot help me, at least look at me. At least look at me." Making people who are in great need invisible is one way that we protect ourselves. by refusing to see them, we do not have to imagine children with no school to attend and teenagers sleeping on a friend's living room couch, women hiding from their abusers, military veterans who cannot access what is rightfully theirs, people seeking employment who have no phones to call or mailboxes to use, and then no place to take a shower or wash clothes. As a society, we have a problem that we try to ignore, to their detriment and to ours as well. People who are homeless. Yes, some are unreliable, unpleasant, and even dangerous. Others are genuine, thoughtful, and will do anything to help, even to a stranger. So that is to say, people who are homeless are just like all other people, and they can teach us what we need to know. This is Reverend Phil Blackwell from MadisonTalks.com.